From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for Veterans Day weekend 2019. Okay, if you're into model railroading, this is your weekend. Train Fest is happening at the State Fair Expo Center. For some big laughs tonight and Saturday, check out Lewis Black at the Pabst Theater. The Packers welcome the Carolina Panthers to the frozen tundra this Sunday, and the Bucks are on the road all this week. Police are still searching for a man who, this week, walked into a bank in Nebraska and tried to open a checking account with a fake $1 million bill. How's this guy still on the loose? And speaking of brain surgeons, a crook in Oklahoma, needed to raise bail money, so he tried to set up a GoFundMe page from jail. Well, you got to appreciate his creativity. And finally, a Seattle burglar broke into an office building and ate $200 worth of chocolate. He didn't and couldn't resist arrest because he collapsed into a sugar coma. In the studio today, we have Art Rothschild, Paige Ratke, Chris Evers, and wrapping up the week, here's Brian Kilb.
Thanks, Max. Hey, we're rounding the corner, heading home on the year, you know, just a few weeks. Hard to believe it's mid-November and, you know, single digits weather. But, you know, kind of keep waiting for things to fall back a bit. But here we are, the NASDAQ up 29%, another good week. I don't know that really anything in particular happened that we haven't spoken about before, but certainly the kind of the momentum this week was to the good, you know, good news on China and apparently some progress there, although then today we kind of walked some of those comments back and much of the same over the last few weeks in terms of feeling better and feeling worse in a short amount of time. So, but as we close the week, it was certainly a good week and certainly plenty of positive things to talk about, yet enough around the horizon to be somewhat cautious and make sure that we're just taking care of business here. So as we end the week, the NASDAQ up, as I said, 28.9%. That's 89 points for the week, up 1.1%. The S&P 500 up 26 points. That's 0.9%. To close at 3093, that's up 25.5% for the year. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 334 points this week. That's 1.2% to close at 27,681. Also big news, I think, this week, the 10-year Treasury up, which began the week at 1.74, ended the week up 1.93. That's a pretty sizable bump in yields. We'll talk about that, too. So I don't know, Arthur, what do you think? It's, like I said, I don't know that the news items themselves are any different, but it seems our take from week to week on some of the pivotal points continues to kind of ebb and flow, and I feel better one day and worse the next, but I guess for this week it was a feel-better week.
Yeah, it's the change in atmosphere, change in attitude. This year, especially relative to last year was a difficult year because we had to get used to this concept of tariffs and trade war. Fed raising interest rates, that was the story of last year. If you would have known this year was going to be as good as it's become, you would have put every dime you've got in the stock market. But you don't, and so you have to be invested for the long haul. And so, quite frankly, it's nice to be making money at this time in the year when last year we gave it all back in October after being up 10% at the end of September. So you're getting the sense, though, that investors, and this is your point about interest rates, and I'm sure we'll be talking more about this, it's nice to see the yield on the 10-year Treasury go up because it's a healthy reflection of investors being a little more aggressive, and at the same time they're buying stocks, and you see stocks going up. So, yeah, I feel very good about what happened this week, but it's not like a lot happened, like you said. It's just a continuation of the story that's been playing all year in the past couple of years.
You know, let's talk about Treasuries for a minute. I've said quite often in the last few weeks that I'm kind of sick of talking about the Fed, you know, but so here I am, let's talk about the Fed. But I do think that lowering rates last time and now seeing this, what is a pretty significant jump in rates this week, it just makes me wonder if maybe when the Fed said something material is going to have to happen from here on out to move rates further, that it didn't perhaps give an appropriate signal that they may be done messing around with things for a while. And then people quit looking at what the Fed does in the short run and start focusing their attention perhaps on the longer term and see that growth hasn't fallen apart. The consumers are still engaged. You know, maybe things get a little bit better in China. Maybe the Brits finally figure out their stuff, and that maybe we've moved past this Fed focus a little bit anyway for the time being, and rates start to rise. And how long ago was it that the 10-year was 1.6 whatever, and we were talking about negative yield curves, and now there's some, albeit shortly lived, perhaps, normalization of the yield curve. Maybe this is kind of good news going forward. I don't know.
Yeah, well, like you said, now that we have seen rates start to rise, you know, for a long time everybody was so focused on that short, that low yield on the 10-year. Anytime that goes low, and especially below the 2-year, you have that recession indicator, you have the inverted yield curve. And it seems like for months that was the only thing that we talked about. So now that we see that 10-year sort of pushing up a little bit, as well as the Fed saying, you know, maybe it is about time to stop lowering rates. You know, we were in an increasing rate cycle, we're back to a decreasing rate cycle. I would really like to see them sort of pare it back and see if those three rate cuts that we already had the impact that they were looking for. You know, as you said, the consumer is still doing really well. Manufacturing, which, you know, isn't as big of a part of the economy as it had been in the past, is still a little bit on the low side. But we want to give the Fed a chance to see those rate cuts actually hit the market and what impact that will have before they, you know, take it a little bit too far.
I just want to bring one thing back to what Art said earlier when he mentioned that seeing the 10-year rate rise is an indication of investors feeling a little bit more comfortable actually with risk. So not just looking at what the 10-year rising means, obviously investors selling bonds on the longer end of the curve, maybe an expectation of growth going up by a repricing of the 10-year, but also look at the areas of the market that have done really well over that time period. So the last 2.5-3 months is when we've seen the 10-year kind of move back up from its lows of 1.5 or whatever it may have been. And over that same time period, you've seen financial stocks, cyclical stocks like industrials, material companies do really, really well, you know, and much of those fit into the value index. So you've seen these value, more cyclical stocks do well, which typically is a signal of people are having a little bit more faith in economic growth as opposed to just technology companies that are less cyclically related.
Yeah, Chris, I think that's a really good point that we have to look at the 10-year right now as sort of leading in the capital allocation. So when you look at, you know, the 10-year and then also more recently that shift to financials and energy starting to outperform, we have to see that as something that's leading that sort of rotation of money rather than looking backwards at it.
So you know, how many new topics are there over the last year or two? Really not that many, but let's bring back another one from a few years ago, the amount of cash that's piled up. So We've added another $1 trillion in 3 years, going back to the peak 3 years ago. So kind of didn't talk about that a lot for a while, and here we are saying, golly, you know, we've had a pretty good year, and stocks aren't overvalued to the extent they might typically be later on in the cycle, and yet there's all this cash out there. It's got to go somewhere, right? I mean,
so one of the themes this week, which has been a theme all year, and coming back to the cash, and there's a big article in the Wall Street Journal actually on Wednesday talking about all this cash and the hope that that cash could be deployed to drive stock prices higher. We spend so much time on a weekly basis talking about what just happened. And quite frankly, though, in our practices, we spend time helping our clients focus on what they should be doing with their money and how they should be invested for the long haul. So when I look back over the past couple of years and the way interest rates have gone up and down and the way bonds and bond funds have gone up and down, if it taught me anything, it's that I should sit back and design portfolios that I think are going to last for years, regardless of what happens, and then we adjust them periodically. What happened this week, and it's the old saying, stocks go up on the rumor, or you buy stocks on the rumor and sell on the news. That's the last thing you want to be doing because you don't really know that that's going to be the case. And the driver this week is where we're is rumors about the deal, you know, the China trade deal. Earlier today with the White House saying, oh, no, not so fast here. But I think we have to believe that we're going to get some stability in global trade, which is consistent with this idea of why investors are starting to believe that maybe we're getting back to normal. Maybe we'll have higher growth. Maybe this weight that's been on the economy is going to be lifted slowly. And this longest expansion in history will continue for a few years. I mean, that's what I'm beginning to feel, that the market is feeling. I feel the same way.
Well, that's the thing, Art. You know, typically when you look at these higher cash balances, that tends to be more of a bearish signal.
Right.
So investors are looking and saying, okay, I'm not sure what's going to be happening going forward. I need to increase my cash to make sure that I'm prepared for any sort of downturn that we might have. Which is a little bit different, I think, than what's happening now, where more often than not you hear investors saying that they've been increasing their cash, but now they're looking at increased optimism. Like you said, global economy is going to start increase. The stock market might go higher. So as they start to see that, we might start to see that cash get more into play, which could mean it's actually a bullish indicator for the stock market.
Absolutely.
You know, it makes me kind of think about a conversation, Chris, that you and I had this morning. We were exchanging some podcasts and have kind of two gentlemen that we respect quite a bit. And one had, I would say, a more enthusiastic perspective on the future. The other, a more negative perspective on the future. And it wasn't that we were talking about specific points that we agreed or disagree on. It's that we were talking about completely different subjects, you know. And it wasn't that we might have a debate about that particular data point and whether it's going to get better or worse. It was like gentleman A is focused on this set of data points and gentleman B is focused on that set of data points. And it just makes you or reminds you how there are so many variables, you know, and how they interact and what could happen potentially that we aren't even talking about to influence things down the road. And I think one of the fascinating things for me anyway, sitting here after having done this for a few years, is the potential for things to get much better than I think and much worse than I think at the same time. And to your point, Arthur, I think that's why, you know, we build portfolios for the potential of what might happen, not based on a forecast of what might happen, and which is not to say that we don't make decisions and we don't actively manage things based on, you know, our best estimates of what's going on, but never to the degree that if you're wrong, it's going to be materially impactful to your portfolio. So I think it's a fascinating time to look ahead and kind of debate about what's going on. There's certainly a lot of things of interest. Looking at the data points this week, I can't help but keep coming back to this idea that productivity has gone nowhere for most of this economic expansion and that labor costs, while on the rise a little bit, still after so much pressure. Now we're seeing more pressure on fewer jobs being filled and all that sort of thing, that I just don't know why that hasn't happened yet, and I'm fascinated by that.
All these things are interrelated. That's the fascinating thing about these discussions. So as Paige was noting, the figures we're getting on cash, money went into cash because interest rates were going up, you know, a year as recently as months ago and before this year started. And so now as they come down, people are going to need to find someplace else for that cash. The same can be said for productivity. Productivity is down because of the uncertainty created by trade uncertainty. So if that cloud lifts and now companies can start spending money on equipment that these employees that they now have in place can use to meet hopefully increasing demand because of more consumer spending globally, not just in the United States, I can see all sorts of reasons why there should be more fuel on this fire, and productivity may well, you know, come around, because that's what the tax cut should have done, but they couldn't do because of the uncertainty created by the trade war. So this could be the next leg of this economic expansion, could be increases in productivity going forward. I don't know. I'm just saying.
Well, no. I mean, I think if you look at it the other way, there aren't a lot of signs that it's the end, right?
Correct.
I mean, there isn't inflation. There isn't we aren't overvalued excessively.
Nope.
You know, I mean, pick a half a dozen other indicators you might see typically at the end of a cycle, and I don't see any of those. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're kind of trying to understand the negativity that's out there, and yet I'm looking at the NASDAQ being up 28.9%. It's an interesting place to be these days, I think, you know, and it may be a situation where that uncertainty, which is driven by politics or whatever it is actually a little bit healthy, that it keeps that roof on stock prices from getting too out of whack.
Yeah, and I think that comes right back to those same cash balances. If you use that kind of as a feel for the sentiment of the investor's not chasing this market with valuations pushing into the 20s. Like you said, you have money market balances at all-time highs. That's not the signal of a, you know, late 90s tech market where, oh, God, we're getting really over in front of ourselves. This is going to be a problem. But it's been a really good year. So I think it's important to remind yourself the things that you're typically looking for that end the market is the Fed, you know, squashing inflation by pushing up interest rates. We haven't seen that. Or, you know, expectations of returns getting so high that investors are just throwing money at stocks. And that hasn't been the case this year either.
Well, I think we keep falling into the trap of talking about economic cycles in terms of how long they've lasted. You know, you've heard on here many times before that expansions don't die of old age. They die of, like you said, Chris, something actually triggering that to happen. So I think we need to stop looking at the length of this expansion from the standpoint of time and start comparing the amount of growth that we've seen over this extended period of time to some of the growth that we've seen in shorter expansions in the past. So rather than looking at, oh, it's been the longest economic expansion in history, if we put that on more of a growth standpoint, how much have we really grown in this time period? And has it been enough that we would think that we'd be coming to the end of that cycle?
You know, and I had a guy the other day then who was pretty concerned about a lot of things. And I reminded him, you know, your stock portfolio in all likelihood these days is probably paying you a greater dividend yield than your bond portfolio is. You know, and if you look at it in terms of income, you know, which is something we haven't talked about in a number of years, right? Does it matter if your stock price is fluctuating for a few years? If it's paying a more substantial amount of income in the interim when you're living in a low income environment to begin with. You know, there's just all kinds of different ways to look at these things. And I think given the divergence in potential between things continuing to move north and perhaps some things causing problems, you know, you end up doing some things at the extreme to make sure that you really lock down parts of your portfolio if things get wild and woolly. Or that if things continue to be a pace better than you expected, that you're positioned well to take care of that. And so, you know, you're back to kind of playing both ends of things in terms of risk and probably a pretty good place to be these days. Arthur, you know, I mean, you've done this a million years. Things kind of come and go in terms of popularity on your desk and things you're trying to do with clients. What's of interest to you these days in terms of things you're really drilling into in clients' portfolios that if you hadn't seen somebody for 3 months, you might be talking about that you didn't talk to them about 3 months ago?
There's two things. I have to comment on something you just said, though, about the role of stocks in a portfolio. You and I have both been around through two of the worst disasters in stock market history, the tech wreck and the 2008-2009 Great Recession. And we've had, clients have been clients throughout those time periods. And it's really fascinating to see when we take a long view how well you can do over time just staying in the game. But coming back to your question.
That's a good point.
Yeah, thanks. Coming back to your question and relating it to the discussion we had earlier about the yield on the 10-year going up, I've spent more time, I think, the past few months talking about a technical term that we've used and talked about on a regular basis around here. We were shortening duration a few years ago because we felt interest rates were going to go higher. I've been lengthening duration. We've been doing that all year. Now, again, interest rates are going up. That's going to cause you to lose money when that happens. So I think investors have to be careful about judging their bond portfolios on the basis of one fund maybe going up or another one going down. So I'm spending more time working with clients on understanding the role of bonds in a portfolio to provide not only long-term stability, but an appropriate level of income, regardless of what happens with Fed policy and long-term interest rates. So that's kind of my latest boring subject that I've been spending time on.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. Paige, what are you thinking these days?
I mean, it's very similar to what Art was saying. You know, one of the main things that I've been looking at is just what the credit quality is like in your bond portfolio. So trying to keep it, you know, not only above into the investment grade realm, but also even just trying to have the highest allocation that you can while still getting the income that you require above BBB. So even putting a little bit less emphasis on that BBB, which just barely falls into that investment grade space. You know, other than that, I think it's just really positioning your portfolio for a way that you are not going to regret if something happens. You don't want to, if you are positioned in too much in bonds, you don't want to regret missing out on a huge run in stocks. If you're positioned too high in stocks, you don't want to regret seeing a huge downturn. So just making sure that regardless of what the market does, you're going to be able to reach your goals and you're going to be comfortable with how you have your portfolio allocated.
Christopher, what are you telling people these days?
Well, I think now is a really good time to remind yourself why those bonds are in your portfolio, right? I mean, we're talking 1.9% being a bigger number on that 10-year treasury. Nothing is exciting about the returns you're going to have about bonds going forward, right? And that's not the reason why you hold them. Much to Art's point earlier, if you look long-term at your performance on stocks, it's unbelievable. Those bonds are there to help you hold on to those stocks when we have sell-offs. You know, it's kind of easy to forget that not too long ago, we had a 19.8% correction on the equity market, right? I think if you didn't have any bonds in your portfolio at that time, it would have been really difficult to just sit through that, right? Mm-hmm. And now those that were able to do that, or maybe even take some of the cash on the sidelines or short-term bonds that they had and throw it into equities at that time, they're reaping the rewards this year. So I think it's important to remember why you hold those bonds. It's not to make returns. It's to allow you to make returns with the other area of your portfolio, which is your riskier stocks.
You know, and I think whenever you think of volatility in your stock portfolio, just remind yourself that if you have 40% of your money in bonds and you spend 4% a year, you get 10 years of bond coverage. Mm-hmm. That's a long time, right? You go back to 2008, it took 4 or 5 years if you had a balanced portfolio to get your stock portfolio back. Live off your bond portfolio for 4 or 5 years, rebalance, and you were none the wiser, you know, so none the worse off. So I think, you know, that's going to be the case for a while. As long as we're in an environment of heightened volatility, just keep looking at that 40, 45, 50% part of your portfolio and know that it's going to get you 10 to 15 years out. And to some degree, it allows you not to be so dialed in on a day-to-day basis as to whether we did the China thing or we didn't do the China thing. I mean, it is almost as hilarious now on a day-to-day basis that news changes. And while I think there's a great deal of importance to the China story and what happens, certainly I think it's not worth getting too wound up until something's signed in ink. So it seems to be reasonably optimistic about that. Let's leave today's show on that term and hope that they're able to get something done done soon, and that would be one less significant issue that we'll focus on as we move forward. So another good week. We'll see what happens next week. It's colder than blazes, Max. I'm glad we're not playing the World Series in this town this week, right? Anyway, thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week. Enjoy your weekend and be safe, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.